Hello.
Hi.
Can you? Oh, yeah, I guess you can hear me. Hi, Joe.
Hi, yeah, I can hear you. I don't see you. Do you see me?
No, so I turned off the camera, and I turned off your camera because I'm out in the wilderness, and I have very little data, so I'm just going to do a low data voice only. Is that okay?
Gotcha. I'm a little... I've kind of was doing a meditation and I fell asleep.
So you're in a good place right now.
Well, yeah, I woke up and I looked at the clock and I said, oh shit.
Well, sort of. I'm currently in Arizona because it's warm down here. I'm normally in New Mexico, but it's super cold, and I think you know that I live outside. So anyways, that's what I'm doing. I'm out here kind of in the middle. I'm staying at a friend's house, but right now I'm out in the wilderness. And so I just have a SIM card that it's like $7 a gig. So it's a little bit expensive to stream video. So I just figured voice would be good. So yeah, that's what I'm up to. And I heard your recent video, your last one. I think it was the Solitary, I think you called it.
Okay, something like that, yeah.
And like all of your, I would say most of your, or if not maybe all of your videos, basically, I can sit down and listen to them. They're all pretty short because I think you want to put them on YouTube. Like, I think maybe you have a 15-minute limitation. And so I always end up with a big list of things. Like, you always are constantly mentioning things, which I'm like, oh, I want to know more about that. But you're like the only person who I can find out more about that from, because it's like that information is not out there, you know? So anyways, just that last video, the Solitary, I had a list of things, but like that one specifically spoke to me. And specifically, you started out by saying that you're kind of in a place in your life right now. You kind of had some recent closures, and things are kind of resolving themselves and no longer seeming like it's really the thing that you need to be focusing on. And you're kind of wondering what you should be spending your time on, or what you be aiming for in your personal life. And like, I feel exactly the same way right now. Like, I'm even at the point where I'm thinking about maybe I should just stop making videos, like maybe try living without the internet, or maybe that, you know. Anyways, it's just a big question in my head. So I wanted to, first of all, kind of understand more about what that is like for you specifically. So are you able to say, like, elaborate on that?
Okay, elaborate on what? Just to clarify.
This feeling of, like, what should I aim for? Like, a feeling of being in a middle of a place where
okay,
we could...
I got you. Okay, yeah. I got you. So for many years, I don't even know how many, it might even be going on 20, I've been trying to put out a message one way or another. And I keep coming back to the zero point. In other words, I keep coming back to saying, well, I said pretty much all that I have to say, because my message is not really very profound. Basically, it's just that the development of the soul is purely a mechanical process that requires, I guess, what I'd call rupturing the astral planes on a daily basis, and that most people simply don't put out enough energy to do that.
Okay. So is this rupturing? Is rupturing the soul?
Rupturing
What does that mean? Or not rupturing the astral, sorry.
Right. Okay. You know how an athlete that's a runner, they'll have their second wind.
Yeah.
That when that happens, they've ruptured something.
Okay.
You remember when you've maybe studied something or you've pushed through, you're really tired, and then you found that extra source.
Mm-hmm.
That's rupturing. You go to these people that go to the gym twice a day, like these Olympic trainees. It's the rupturing. Because what they're doing is they're generating physical energy with their body. Well, I'll put another way, with the tantric process, it's people that actually are able to have an orgasm twice a day in, you know, fairly close to each other, but can do this on a daily basis. Physically generate enough energy to rupture something, to get a second wind, kind of.
So the first wind is your physical energy. Is that right?
Well, it's all generated by physical energy, but yeah. But
so what is the difference between the first source and the second source?
The second one is where something, it's like all of a sudden you're getting it. The first one doesn't quite do it. The second one does. Or maybe I should say, the first time you do it, you know it like a second wind. You feel pretty good. It's harder to do it the second time. Okay, but here's the key, because I'm going to change my, I'm going to dive off to the side for a minute here, but it counts, okay?
Okay.
What happens is when you do this, and there's many ways of doing it, like I mentioned, you're living deeply, but when you do it, your body, your physical body is charged like a battery, because it's capacitive in nature. And at night when you sleep, it discharges all that energy. So that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a massive discharge of that energy through your dreams while you're in your sleep. But here's another, now I'm going to change the lunar and the solar cycle, or even the daily cycle, because the astral planes rupture according to the solar cycle, and they rupture according to the lunar cycle, and they rupture according to the daily cycle. So, for example, the full moon. The full moon is the maximum point of compression, and that's usually where something pops, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The new moon is kind of like where you take an empty syringe and you're basically pulling the awareness up. The new moon is where things come into awareness. The full moon is where things are pushed into physicality.
Okay.
If you take the solar cycle, the same thing happens with the summer solstice. Is the time of maximum compression. It's pushing everything out into the physical. The winter solstice is a time where you're sucking it in. You're not pushing it. So you're like drawing in, and it's coming into awareness. And you can say the same thing about noon during the day being the time of maximum compression for physicality, and midnight for that time when it's pulling it in. And what happens is each of those times, twice a day, the astral planes will rupture. And what happens is those things that can move forward are released to move forward, and those things that don't have enough to move forward are held back.
Okay, so if someone is aiming to rupture it twice a day with the goal of soul development, it sounds mm-hmm. like you're saying that there's rupturing which is occurring twice a day already, and so it seems like there wouldn't be anything that anyone needed to do specifically.
Except that the astral has this tendency to, it wants to keep the status quo.
Okay.
So what it acts is like, it acts like a shock absorber, and it will take your energy. And in other words, it's a spike that causes the growth. It's not the just general generation of energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's the spike. It's the rupture. So what you have to do is you have to spike.
So is this kind of analogous to someone doing weightlifting, having a short period of time where they're stressing out their muscles, and then that causes them to grow?
Well, it's called the spiking, using the way I'd say it is, some people say, okay, I'm going to do maybe 30 reps of arm curls or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to maybe only doing 5 reps of a weight that's twice as heavy.
Okay.
The weight, doing 5 reps of the weight that's twice as heavy, is going to cause the spike. It's going to cause more growth. It's going to cause the rupture.
So it's about more basically amperage at once in a shorter period of time.
The spiking. Yep. It's living intensely. It's doing whatever you're doing intensely.
So what would be an example of, like, for example, your method of rupturing twice a day?
Well, again, I'll give 4 examples, okay?
Okay.
One example, and I don't really do this, but it's, some people do it. It's, if you hold your breath, you hold it in and you hold it out. That's one way of rupturing, because you reach a point where you're stressing something, so to where something happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Working with a kettlebell, that is another form of rupturing things. Doing energy ball meditation like I do is another form of rupturing. And tantric process, which is working with sexual energies, is another way of doing it.
Would you say all 4 of those develop the soul?
All 4 of those develop different aspects of the soul. Because you have 7 different types of energy. You have, now think of this. There's 7 colors in the rainbow, right?
Yep.
And there are 7 notes on the piano keyboard, right?
Yep. In a scale, yes.
And there are 7 rings in a possible atom, right?
I think that's right, although I'm not quite sure that it doesn't go beyond that, but we'll assume that you're right.
Okay, it is, as far as we know, it's correct.
Okay.
And what I'm saying is, each of those rings around the atom represents one astral body that can be developed, one part of the soul that can be developed.
Right, and these are the chakras, and also the like helium, radon, the noble gases.
Right. Yep. Now, Dion Fortune calls them, like, unity is unity is just light, okay? The photon energy,
mm-hmm,
that you can tap into. But the first innermost ring of the atom is got 2 electrons. And that's called spiritual, the concrete spiritual. You have the photon itself is going to be abstract spiritual. When you go to the helium, which is the first actual astral body there, the higher self astral body, you would call that spiritual abstract energy.
Is that? What chakra is that?
That would, you're talking about your third eye and your crown chakra.
Okay.
Okay, or there's a chakra inside the middle of the head there. That's basically you're talking about, I misspoke. It would be the like the crown chakra. Well, anyway, let me continue with the other two, because you have the next, you get into the mental energies, and you have what's called the abstract mental, which has your eight, if you use the atomic shell method, eight mm-hmm. sensory inputs, and you have the concrete mental, which is also eight. So that mm-hmm. would be like the second and third astral body possible. The abstract one is your philosophical, logical reasoning ability, your creative intelligence. The concrete mental is going to be our perception of the world.
Are these still aligned to the chakras, or are we going downwards?
Yes, we're going downward, and they're still aligned with chakras.
Okay.
And we're talking about the the throat chakra and getting into like the heart chakra. Well, yeah, the heart chakra, whatever. Sometimes I get a little bit mixed up in my head as I'm saying this, whatever, but if you just kind of follow along. So we did two types of mental, and we did two types of spiritual energy. We did two types of mental energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now we have two types of emotional energy. We have the upper emotional energy. We have the lower emotional energy.
So that's the heart and the diaphragm, basically?
Yeah, the heart and solar plexus.
Okay.
Okay. After that, we have two more electron rings possible, which each have 32 sensory inputs, which is why it's so rich, because the lower you get, the more rich it is, right?
Mm-hmm. Dense.
Okay. So you're going to have what's called the sacral chakra or physical energy, which creates basically what we talk of as the physical body, but an immortal physical body. And below that, you have the etheric level, which is actually the source of life. It connects to the Akashic records and everything like that.
Okay.
So you're following kind of what I'm getting at?
Yep.
And how each one of these has a electron ring and they have a sensory input. Well, when you do the rupturing process, what you're doing is adding an electron.
Okay.
Depending on what kind of where you're doing it or how you're doing it, is where it's going to kick in.
Would it be accurate to say first of all, is that electron a permanent, or you're saying like in that moment you're adding it and it could come and go?
In the beginning, it can come and go, but if you do it enough so that it snaps into place, that's what the rupturing process does. It snaps into place in a new way. It becomes permanent.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
What's interesting is if you have a favorite way of generating energy and you have fully developed that particular astral body, that and you continue generating more energy for another electron or another sensory point, it'll go up or down to where it is needed.
It'll overflow to the other chakras, is that what you mean?
Yes, it'll overflow to the other chakras.
Okay.
Now, what happens is the astral plane normally ruptures itself, like you said, twice a day. and you have special times during the month, and you have special time during the year when this compression or this drawing out is stronger. But what you are essentially doing is, because none of us can change by ourselves, we're caught in our own prison system, we're caught in our own belief system. What we can do is figuratively throw ourselves in front of a train. The train comes along and hits us, bam, and then we got to put ourselves back together again. That's what the rupturing process does.
Gotcha.
It's kind of hard to say, but that's what it does.
Yeah,
and that's the only thing that really works.
It makes sense, and it also makes sense with my kind of my understanding that I have nowadays of how the soul works, like kind of seeing the soul as almost like an echo from the body, and that soul, after being generated by the body, may find itself in another body, in a way of saying, right? And then continue that process of adding energy to itself so that at some point it becomes self-existent, you know what I mean? Like it doesn't, well, not that it wouldn't continue to go into bodies, but it exists strongly and distinctly even when there isn't a body present. Is that how you see it?
Well, that's the most important part, because what that requires is a sense of self. It requires a core that can hold itself together, whether it's in a physical body or not.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't have their shit together enough to hold their core together.
Yeah, their identity is more of the group identity.
Well, if they identify too much with the physical body, how can it exist outside the physical body after the death of the physical body? All you're going to have is you're going to have fragments. This fragment's going to go here. This fragment's going to go here. Will they be able to hook back together? Probably not.
Or maybe maybe
go ahead.
So when I was young, I had this speaker system which was based on magnets, and it held all these metal pieces together, but everything had to be aligned really perfectly. And if you even adjusted the magnets even a tiny little bit, then all the pieces would just go flinging across the room. And this is another thing that I'm reading. I don't know if you know Carlos Castaneda, but
yeah.
He wrote a series of books, and they talk about how when you die, you kind of reach a point where you reach what they call the third attention, and there's the first and the second attention, but there's the third attention, and it's kind of like a purity of awareness. But most people instantly are basically, it's like they explode, you know, and they just go shattering, all the different pieces of them go shattering across the universe. So anyways, I just wanted to point out that like those two things are brought to mind when you mention that.
Yeah. And that's why it's so important to bring them back, bring them together, to have a core. And this kind of branches into what's called the soul, which is with the invention of reading and writing for the first time. And people had to kind of create an inner world and people it with things,
mm-hmm.
just to understand what the reading and writing, what the words were.
Mm-hmm.
And that, through psychology, that's called the observer self, which is actually that part of you that holds together after the death of the physical body. But is it fully integrate, how many chakra centers is it fully integrated with? Or is it only a mental energy body?
So could one of them stay stable and not fly apart, and all the other aspects do fly off?
Yes.
Okay.
They go back and join the melting pot and stir it up or whatever, yeah.
Okay, so but then so you could develop by developing a certain center, you might die and then start over again, but you would have that one part that you had developed, and you can continue trying to build another part, which is going to continue to exist once your body dies. Is that true?
If they're integrated, which that's why they're integrated with each other. And I would say that a lot of people maybe have the ability to have two or three of them hooked together to where they're integrated, so that at the death of their physical body, they can tap into not only the mental energies and be self-aware, but they can tap into some of the emotional energies.
Mm-hmm.
But can they tap into some of the physical energies, or can they tap in way down below to the etheric energies? Some people can, especially those occultists who really are strong on the etheric plane, which is that plane of the ghosts and the spirits and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, and the here's where it kind of comes into play. The old way, the old energetic system will only allow a person to choose, are you going to connect to the earth level or the lowest level, or are you going to connect to the highest for your power source? If you connect to the lowest, to the earth, it's a magical core. If you connect to the photon, to the light, it's a spiritual core. Well, that's all changed, because now there's people like myself and like people that I know that I've taught and stuff like that, that have built a bridge. They've built a bridge between the earth and the photon.
Are they the bridge? Are you saying that the bridge is themselves? Okay.
They are the bridge. They are the bridge themselves. Yes. And what's happened is, the old way, because it couldn't bridge that gap, relied upon the collective. So the old way always had the individual and used the collective. It tried to manipulate the collective for its power. That's why you see all this narrative stuff. Everybody's, okay, let's try to get the herd mentality going so that we can achieve our goals. That's why Freemasonry, they said, well, the master has the chisel and has the hammer. And the hammer is the force of the masses, and the chisel is where the master directs it. It's the use, the deliberate use of narrative. It's the deliberate use of the power of the masses to get what they want. And that's done with. That's over. That doesn't work anymore, because humanity's gone to a quantum leap of individuation. Because now, for the first time, they're able to span, they're able to bridge that gap between the highest and lowest. And you still have soulmate connections, but you don't have that herd impulse falls apart. It falls apart.
I'm getting the same sense, but it also seems to me, when I look out into the internet world, you know, you see people like me and you, who I would say are kind of that individual loner pillar type, and
right,
we have no audience. And the people who have audience are the people who are basically, like you called them vampires in your video, and I think that's true. I mean, it's not as nefarious as that, but or maybe it is as nefarious as that. But I mean, it seems like, if we look at the way the world is at the moment, it seems like that is still in control. It is still the major mode.
Right. Okay. And you're at a good point there, because what happens is the next thing to talk about is the ability to integrate the shadow or to not integrate the shadow. We are seeing only the individual. Well, what's happening in our world is the shadow is erupting. It's erupting everywhere. And people like you and I would assume like you, but certain people are able to integrate the shadow because of being solo, because of following a solo path, okay? Because of not gaining their power from the collective.
Mm.
But those people who gain the power from the collective or who are members of the collective, what they're seeing is a growing polarization. Mm-hmm. And what's happening, acting out in the physical, is they're seeing their greatest fears and their greatest desires both come true.
Mm-hmm. So the extremes.
There's a lot of people that I know, even my oldest daughter that just had twins, and these twins are having horrible, horrible medical issues.
Mm.
They're seeing the dream, you know, having the highest dream of having some more babies, but then seeing the worst fears of some of these things that are going wrong. Or yeah. My best friend, who is, I just found out he's nobody knows where he is. He's in the hospital someplace, they think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's what's happening is the people who are part of the collective are getting the extremes of the highs and the lows. And what's happening for the first time, because this year is the first time this energy is really, really, really kicking in, you're able to tell who's with the energy and who's against it. If you think of the Bible and you think of Job, the book mm-hmm. of Job, it yep. says that every stone, when Adam and Eve were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, every stone on the earth was turned against them.
Mm.
And people like you and I'm saying like you, but I'm assuming like you because we're talking here, but like people who follow the solar path, we have spent lifetime after lifetime after lifetime as these type of humans that have had every stone turned against us.
Mm.
And so it's been a goddamn struggle and a fight all the way. But it's changed. All of a sudden, it's the other side that is having every stone turned against them. And my life is starting to be pretty nice, figuratively speaking.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I feel what I see in the world right now is that everything seems to be getting worse. You know, if you're looking at the news, that's obviously true. It's kind of always true, but it's maybe especially true now. But in people's specific lives, I also see the same thing you're seeing. It's just like so much disaster. Abnormal amounts of disaster.
Yeah, just unending.
Yeah, and my feeling, and this is just an intuitive strategy that I've found and I've been using for years, is to just withdraw. And I'm so, you know, I don't use banks. You know, I'm very withdrawn from society. I don't have a full-time job. I basically just make videos and live off of a very small amount of donations. And my life is amazing. Like almost completely amazing. Like almost all the time. And I never have any troubles until I start interacting with the people that you're talking about. And then I take on their disasters.
Their problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, you take on their problem. Exactly. So you're saying the same thing that I'm saying.
Yeah.
You're saying basically the whole thing about the solitary path.
Mm-hmm.
You're coming at it. I mean, you might use different words or whatever, but the solitary path is the one that's doing pretty well.
Yeah. So then the answer to the why does in the world does it look like, you know, we're losing, and you're saying, well, it's just turned to this, you know, it's just the tables just turned. And so the world takes a while to catch up to the new, to what is now truly advantageous. People will learn
the people that can turn to what's truly truly advantageous.
Yeah.
A lot of people, they're so caught up in their heads that they are not capable of, they have every stone turned against them, every scheme, every machination that they attempt blows up in their face.
Mm-hmm.
And do they learn their lesson? No. they double down and they go to the next one.
Yeah.
But it's the consequences and the costs are getting higher and higher and higher.
Yeah.
And somebody like me who's, you know, I've had to downsize a lot. You've had to downsize a lot. We've downsized to the point where, you know, we're doing okay.
Yep. And I feel optimistic. Like when I look into the future specifically for myself, you know, I see everything continuing to get better.
Exactly. And now we're going to get into something that's kind of interesting because we're going to talk about timelines.
Okay.
People like you, what you're talking about and what you're doing, and people like me, we are creating timelines that are extremely powerful.
Mm-hmm.
They are more powerful than the collective timelines. So what happens is the collective timelines bump up against ours. Okay, I'm going to use an example. I'm going to say, okay, my timeline has me as a retired person who's living off Social Security. I'm in a public housing. I have very little, I don't have a lot of money or anything like that, but I have, you know, it's what I need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my timeline, okay? I'm not like a super author or somebody who's real prominent or anything like that. I do have a sphere of influence, you know, through my translations, my stories and stuff like that. And that's what I'm turning to, is I'm turning to more story writing. I'm actually, my sphere of influence is going to be growing because I'm going to be putting out these, I'm putting out these stories, not mm-hmm. because I'm trying to put out spirituality stuff. That was kind of what I was getting at in my video that you were talking about.
So
what happens is the timeline that I'm creating, okay, what's that got? It's got me dependent upon my monthly Social Security check, right?
Mm-hmm.
So every aspect of my core, my soul, is ensuring that I continue to get my Social Security check.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not going to run out, that we're not going to have a war or something like that. And every time there's an urge for something like that that'll come up that will maybe mess with my Social Security check, I'm out there in the astral fighting it.
Do you think that there's, is it purely you who are making these things happen? Or do you think when you create the timeline, then it's almost like another force is, like the universe itself is defending your timeline. You know what I mean? Because fighting off myself sounds exhausting.
It's both, because I am actually connected to the universe. I'm actually connected to the timeline. I'm actually connected to both polarities. So I can speak with the force of both polarities, or I can act with both polarities. Instead of, and this gets into the concept of alternating current versus direct current. I'm able to use alternating current, which means the shadow self is just as active as the light self. And they're both moving me forward. I have a light step that's moving me forward, and I have a dark step that's moving me forward, and the light step moves me forward. Whereas everybody else, they're kind of like going one step forward and then one step backward, one step forward, one step backward. But now these people, the elite, or these people who have been on top, what are they seeing? They're seeing all of a sudden every frickin' thing they try to do is moving them backward. Their whole world is collapsing because it's based upon the collective. And it takes time. It takes time for some of these things to change.
So you're basically saying that you've developed a timeline for yourself, and the timeline doesn't need to be anything flashy. It just needs to be solid. And that, basically you're saying that changes the course of world events.
Yes, absolutely. And there, everybody like me is doing that.
I also feel that too. You know, that idea of it not needing to be anything flashy is kind of a new, like for me, my idea of establishing a timeline is this, you know, being as helpful as I can, like, but influencing as many people as I can, and therefore being able to be around for a long time and able to do that seems to would enhance my ability to meet that timeline. But you, and so that's kind of a grandiose thing. And you talked about another thing in the video about how
translating more stories.
Right. Do you see that as influencing people in kind of the same way?
Actually, because these stories that I translate, they're German horror stories, kind of. They have that earth connection, and they stir up the shadow. Mm. And by stirring up the shadow, it comes into awareness where you can integrate parts of yourself that otherwise you wouldn't be able to integrate. Mm. So it is stirring up shit, kind of, in a way.
Yeah, I see that.
As opposed to all these people who are going like, think of light, think of good things, think of whatever. Sometimes you need to think of some of this bad stuff, because bad shit happens to people.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had lifetimes where we've been bad.
Yeah, you talked about it's like a warm blanket, and that may seem like a grotesque thought to a lot of people, but when you said that in that video, I knew exactly what you meant. You know, I've always been kind of
human.
Yeah, you know, complete in that sense.
yeah, human, as opposed to being the Frank and the devil angel thing.
Yeah, the extremes again. That's another thing that keeps coming up in this conversation.
Yeah, who wants to be on the extreme ends of the polarity? Just be human.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the yin-yang symbol, it's perfectly balanced. It's the opposites are perfectly balanced.
So the world stage, it looks to me like basically what they're trying to do is get the polarize people to the point where you talk about how when you polarize things so strongly that it basically creates a, like an anomaly, right? You know, where there has to be an exchange of energy. There's so much pressure that this energy is willing to bridge the gap, you know, between like two electrical nodes. Electricity doesn't like to go through the air, but if you build up the pressure high enough, it's going to create a lightning bolt, right? And that lightning bolt is extremely destructive.
Exactly.
And they're trying to build the world up into a place where that happens, but it seems like you're saying you actually think that that's not going to succeed.
Not if we can do it the other way.
Okay.
Not if we can bleed off that electrical charge and integrate it. Put it into vital life force, put it into the earth, put it into other things. Because the only way that the lightning bolt happens is when there's no other way.
Mm-hmm.
But we have found another way. And what's happening is all these people, they keep trying to build that charge up and build that charge up. Let's get World War III going. Build that charge up, and it keeps fizzling on them. It doesn't work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it never will. And they literally don't have another way to do it. They don't know another way to do it. The only other way to do it is to integrate it yourself, to switch to be fully open to the shadow. And the shadow is actually a secondary personality, just like the higher self is a secondary personality. We need to integrate them both.
Mm.
The shadow is actually all those things that we recognize that are inside of us that we wish were not inside of us. And the higher self is all those things that we wish were inside of us, but we think are not inside of us. Mm-hmm. And the trick is to look at the shadow and to realize that those things that are inside of us that we hated, they actually are serving a positive and loving purpose. And if we look at the higher self and we see those things that we think are not inside of us that are missing, we can discover that they're actually there and learn to love ourselves. That's the process.
And so this goes back to the beginning where we were talking about kind of the chakras. You have the top chakra and the bottom chakra, and building the connection between the two, kind of being the, basically the idea is integration. And right. I don't know, it's like the idea of the shadow self, that it's a hard thing because, like, for example, I mean, I won't give specific examples, but there are aspects of myself which it's hard to think of myself as integrating. Like, what does it look like to integrate and accept something about yourself which is pretty gross? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I remember years ago, I had this dream. It was a dream vision or whatever. And it was in a subterranean. It was like there was a sea. And I was on the shore, and there was a sea monster out there. And I was fishing for that sea monster. And there was a cord. There was a cord that was going from me to that sea monster, and I was pulling it in. And it was fighting, and it had these sharp teeth that kept snapping. It was really terrible. It was fearful. And I kept pulling it in and pulling it in, and I finally pulled it onto the shore, and it turned into an alligator pup, what I called an alligator puppy. it had like a stubby tail, but otherwise it was like an alligator, and it became my pet.
Uh-huh.
And its job was to protect me, to use that fierceness, to use that reptilian energy to protect me. And over the years, as I integrated it even more, it gradually became human.
So the monster was a part of yourself which had its own purpose and somehow...
To keep me alive.
It ended up needing to become a monster in order to fulfill that purpose. And then the integration process was you forcing yourself to basically face it and seeing it for what it really was. You know, it wasn't really anything all that threatening. And in fact, it became... Friend. Right. It became something really useful to you.
Yes.
So, cool. That's awesome.
And that's the process of the confronting the shadow is to realize that, hey, it's just trying to keep you alive. It's just trying to keep you safe. But we've dumped all this shit on it.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah.
So, just so you know, I generally, once it starts hitting about the hour mark for a conversation, I start losing my ability to focus. So I want to kind of start moving towards wrapping it up. But I wanted to bring it back to the Oaks meditation that you're talking about as an example of rupturing. Because I did the meditation, I think, yesterday. And it's a visualization of the energy ball above your head, about 2 inches above your head, and it's bringing the energy down from, the light, right, as opposed to down right. The earth. So you're bringing the energy down into that ball. You're imagining that. And you said that you basically in that thing, we focused on building another energy ball, which was in the head, which I assume you were saying was the third eye chakra, but I don't think you said it in the meditation. And then...
The second one is actually in the middle of the head, which was actually the reptilian brain.
So it's not the third eye chakra?
No, the third eye chakra is actually the third one.
Interesting. Okay, so you're basically then you're merging them. So the visualization now has two balls and they're spinning, and then you imagine them kind of spinning into each other and becoming one spinning thing. So is the ultimate goal of this meditation to go all the way to the bottom from the top and merge all of them?
Yes, because every time you do that, it creates a permanent change. It's actually rupturing.
Okay.
And when the astral finally snaps, it tries to hold the new position.
Okay.
So what you're trying to do is get each chakra center, each type of energy to communicate with each other and to make each type of energy available to the other centers when it's needed. Because when you're in a nightmare or when you're in astral battle and you're out of energy, you can draw from one of these other centers if that conduit is open.
Gotcha.
So it's the whole process. It's the whole integration process. That's what's so powerful about the meditations.
I've always been a meditator, but I've tried lots of different meditations throughout my life, and honestly, I don't feel like many of them have been very helpful. And I'm kind of at this point, like we talked about at the very beginning, where I'm trying to figure out where to put my energy. And this meditation that you're describing here feels like it makes total sense to me. And it like is so clean, you know, it's just so direct and to the point. It's just, we're developing the soul. The soul is a mechanical. You develop the soul mechanically, basically through energy, and it has different energy centers, and these centers can be built individually and connected with each other. And here's a very basic meditation which has you doing that in the simplest way possible. So I just think it's really cool, and I'm excited to be doing it. And I enjoyed your... You only have one video where you do the thing. I don't know if you're ever planning on doing another one where you incorporate the other centers, but I personally would be interested in that. And I did want to ask one question. It's like you said to spin the energy, and I get anxiety because I don't want to spin it the wrong way. You know what I mean? How am I spinning it? How is it spinning?
Well, it doesn't matter, but I usually kind of spin it like I'm rolling a snowball, like making a snowman.
So frontwards, then.
That's what I kind of do, yeah.
But you would say it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter. What happens is you have two types of energy, and then something snaps, and you have one type of energy. That's all that's important, is when they snap together.
Gotcha.
And I have lots of meditations out there that kind of try different things. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you'd have to look around and see stuff like that. But that's basically what it is if two types of energy, well, you actually have seven types of energy, but when they merge, they become one type of energy. And what you're talking about there is extremely powerful, because it's integrating all of them in a harmonic of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that it's not like meditating, like walking through a forest and seeing a spirit animal or something like that. It's just taking an energy ball and hooking it together with another energy ball.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly,
you look at the meditation and it seems pretty mundane and normal and nothing special, but it's also, I see it as, it's like the refined, it's like something that's been refined over thousands of years to this almost perfection point. This might be, you know, overselling it, but I feel like, I mean, your knowledge in order to get to this point where you have this meditation, I don't know if you draw it from someone else specifically or you've kind of developed yourself, but this knowledge, you know, comes from standing on the shoulders of people who have been working on this type of stuff for thousands of years. So it may be simple, but it's certainly not, you know, unimportant.
Right. I can say that I've never ran across it before, but I've ran across things like it in magical paths where they do talk about the having a ball of energy about 2 feet above, or 2 inches above your head and drawing upon that. Or an energy ball, for example, where your feet touch the ground. So they do recognize some of those things. But most of this meditation that I've ran across, really, they try to let's start from the feet and work up. And I'm starting from the top and working down.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think working from the top and working down is the more safe. It's safer because your higher self is in control of the operation that way.
Yeah, I think I get what you're saying. So my normal meditation is the microcosmic orbit and starts at the root chakra. And I don't think I could describe how I understand what you're saying, but I get what you're saying. Like there's something definitely different about starting at the top that I notice.
Right. And actually being able to circulate it, the microcosmic, that's like Montauk Chia.
Yep.
I'm pretty influenced by Montauk Chia, but yeah, the circulation, that's what's important, really, really important. Mm-hmm. But I do believe also the starting at the top, because everything is originally created from the photon energy.
Mm.
But you know what comes from the bottom? Life.
No. Oh, I see.
Life comes from the bottom.
So life comes from Earth, life comes from density?
Life comes from a full spectrum of that full spectrum of atomic energies.
Gotcha.
Life, that's what creates the whole DNA change or chain. I mean, if you think of the last possible atom of the element 118 that has 7 full electron shells.
Mm-hmm.
It is a noble gas. It's tasteless. You can't see it. You can't feel it. There's no way of knowing that it's there. But I believe that space is an ocean of that.
Basically, an ocean of the densest thing possible.
Right. And that everything emerges out of that as a complex molecules, mm-hmm. as life, as DNA. It emerges out of that ocean that we think of as the void.
Mm. And I think you said that the soul journey is actually to get back to that point. Like you're building up the noble gases in your energy centers, but ultimately it's to reach a point where you're back at that most dense noble gas. Is that right?
Right. Where you have all 7 of them fully activated. And so you have the most rich life experience possible.
Hmm.
The thing is that ultimately, when you're talking about energy, it's going to be that photon energy that comes in that drives the whole system. That's why it's so important to start at the top.
Mm.
But it's also why it's so important that you bring that energy from the bottom up to the top to where they connect, so you have a two-way circuit.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in its own sense, the microcosmic orbit creates a two-way thing.
Yep.
In other words, just all these traditions, everybody's kind of saying the same thing when it comes down to it.
But they're all kind of fluffy, you know? They all have a lot of, you know, explanations and ritual. And it seems like, from what I've seen, your meditation is as direct and to the point as could possibly be. You know, it's about, here's the energy, here's the merging to the next level. Okay, once you've gotten that, you've done that for a week, add the next level. Do that for a week, add the next level. And then once you've got all of them, just keep practicing that meditation.
Right. Well, and there's an important difference too, which people that have kind of followed me for a long time recognize this. But let's say you've merged the first two together to where they've literally became one type of energy, the one that's mm-hmm. 2 inches above your head and the one that's inside your brain.
Mm-hmm.
When you add, and then you do the third one and you add that, each time this energy ball is bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was originally doing this, I started to move it up and down the spine. And what I found was that it acted like a magnet and it grabbed all kinds of black shit.
Interesting.
So I tried to bring it down into the throat chakra and it grabbed a bunch of black shit. And so what I did was I raised it back up into the light and I kind of shook the black shit off of it. And then I lowered it back down a little bit and it grabbed some more black shit out of the throat chakra. And then I raised it back up into the light and it got rid of it. In other words, and the people that I've talked to that have done the same thing, they say the throat chakra and the heart chakra are the places where that original energy ball tends to get stuck.
Mm. So because there's so much of that stuff, of that blackness?
Yep, because there's so much black shit. And I actually had a spot, I have some places where my back, I actually broke it, I guess. I didn't even know I did when I was younger. But there were some places in my spine where the energy ball didn't want to go through. And it took like a couple weeks of kind of moving it up and down like sandpaper before that energy would flow through that spot.
Interesting.
So
I feel like I have something very similar, by the way. And also, I think it's probably from an unknown childhood injury. So I know exactly what you mean.
So it's very powerful in a totally different way, because what it does is it gets rid of this shit. It gets rid of this black energy that's trapped inside your body.
And seems to be able to bridge broken connections.
Right. To recreate the correct connections, to mm-hmm. bridge the broken one. Yeah. So all of those things are developments of that first exercise. When I first started doing it, it took me several months, well, a couple months anyway, before I could reach the bottom, and I didn't really know what to do. I was guided somehow to keep working with it and stuff like that. But yeah, I was amazed. And when I've done that in meditations with other people or with groups and stuff like that, it has been extremely powerful in clearing the sludge out when it goes all the way down to the core of the earth. But the sludge actually happens in some of the higher centers. I remember I was at the Real Witches Ball in Ohio back when they had that years ago. This would be before your time, probably. one time I offered a class with that meditation, and there was two girls that came up to me afterwards, and they said that their periods had started because
wow.
of that meditation.
Holy crap, man. That's intense.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to play around with this. I was hoping to get into the soulmate stuff, but I feel like that's way too big of another thing to bring up. So I wonder if you're open to maybe having another conversation like this with that as the starting point.
Yeah, whenever. I'm open to see. I don't have people really to talk to about these things. So I enjoy talking about them.
Wow, I really enjoy talking about it with you too. I mean, I feel like we're very similar, but also you're older and more than I do. And so, I mean, I wouldn't call you like a teacher, but I kind of like the term that Carlos Castaneda uses, which is the benefactor. I kind of see you as a benefactor. So it's really, it's very enriching to talk to you. So I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Like I said.
All right. Well, I'll get in touch. I'm thinking maybe like next week. I don't know. Does that sound okay with you?
Yeah, whatever. I'm retired, so it doesn't much matter.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll send you an email in a few days about it then.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for coming and chatting.
Yep. Bye.
Bye-bye.